So then, chapter 9, the next next item is going to the temple of Vishnu or to places of pilgrimage. It is stated in the Puranas, persons who attempt to visit the holy places of pilgrimage like Vrindavan, Mathura, or Dwarka are actually glorified. By such traveling activities, they can pass over the desert of material existence. I think we read this, no? We did. Circumambulating the temple, we did? No. Okay. Circumambulating the temple of Vishnu. It is said in the Hari Bhakti Shurodoy, a person who is circumambulating the deity of Vishnu can counteract the circumambulation of repeated birth and death in this material world. Conditioned soul is circumambulating through repeated births and deaths on account of his material existence, and this can be counteracted simply by circumambulating the deity in the temple. The Chaturmasi ceremony is observed during the 4 months of the rainy season in India, approximately July, August, September, and October, beginning from Shravan. During these 4 months, saintly persons who are accustomed to travel from one place to another to propagate Krishna consciousness remain at one place, usually a holy place of pilgrimage. During these times, there are certain special rules and regulations which are strictly followed. It is stated in the Skanda Purana that during this period, if someone circumambulates the temple of Vishnu at least 4 times, it is understood that he has traveled all over the universe. By such circumambulation, one is understood to have seen all the holy places where the Ganges water is flowing. And by following the regulative principles of Chaturmasya, one can very quickly be raised to the platform of devotional service. So circumambulating means we're putting Krishna as the center, like that, and we're going out around him as a sign of respect. So this, by doing this, putting Krishna as the center and going around him, then it's mentioned here that the repeated cycle of birth and death, that will be stopped. Because we're going around because we put ourselves at the center. So centered around the mind is then all of our trying to fulfill so many desires of the mind. And this then takes us around the universe, birth after birth. Because from the mind, it creates the next body. Due to our desires, we create that body. So then if we put Krishna in the center, then it's not the mind creating new bodies for us. So naturally then it just stops the system. But we put the mind as the center, then automatically then there's birth after birth after birth. So it's a very simple formula, is that as we make Krishna the center of our life, then there's no need of material life anymore. Then it's finished. Because material life is only necessary because we want to put ourselves in the center. The senses in the center. So the senses are controlled by the mind. So the mind then arranges birth after birth so we can fulfill. Because we want to enjoy eternally. We want to be happy eternally. So then the mind, this is the system. When the mind is working, eternal life is seemingly done by just birth after birth after birth. Like that. But we put Krishna at the center, then we don't need that system. Then we can just stay, because Krishna doesn't change. Like that. So therefore, then with one life, one eternal life, then one can live eternally. But otherwise with the mind, because it's always flickering, it's always changing, therefore the bodies must also change. Then, so Prabhupada says they're counteracted simply by circumambulating the deity in the temple. So it's considered not even a difficult thing. The circumambulation is easy, but just the effect is so great that itself just simply stops the process. Like that, one is no longer than within this. So then, and then the next point Prabhupada makes is also within Chaturmasya, because Chaturmasya is then when we sit down and we study more. That's a very good time for study. From when this Shravan month starts, we find that the mind is more peaceful, and it is more easily directed into study. But to do that, one must restrict the senses. That is there. One is the health is so strong during this period. It's a weak period for health during the Chaturmas. So by controlling the eating, by controlling everything, regulating very strictly, the health will be maintained, no problem. The other thing that's very important is the mind can become fixed very easily in this season. So now, if the senses are controlled, then you can fix the mind on spiritual subject matter. If not, then you'll find that it will become very bewildered by sense gratification. Because at this time, we don't have the natural inspiration of the sun going on the northern course. Now it goes towards the south. So during the Chaturmasa, when it goes towards the south, the days start to become shorter than the nights. The days become shorter. Then we're not as enlivened, as inspired during this time. As we see in the Brahma Gayatri, it says, by the sun we are enlivened. We worship the energy of the sun by which we are enlivened. So we find that it's less during this time, that sun. So that natural inspiration, a natural kind of feeling of things are happening. Like just when spring comes, you know, it's kind of like you smell something in the air. It seems like something's going on. So during that 6 months, then one is very naturally very enlivened. But during this next 6 months, then it's going the other way. So the tendency is then to, when it's not naturally outgoing, is that when it goes in, then it can seem boring. You know, and then in that boring state, one wants to do things that will create some enlivenment. So if the senses aren't controlled, then being enlivened means enlivening the senses. Therefore, chaturmasi, the study and the control of the senses go together. So it's not an arbitrary thing, but it is there. But if one is busy preaching like this, then the senses are controlled, and then one is going on. But if one's going to sit and study, the senses must be controlled. There must be some regulation. You know, whatever works nicely, but it must be there. So then you get so much very great result during this time. Then it's mentioned that here, that in relationship to the circumambulating, generally you'd circumambulate the temple 3 times. You know, that's a minimum standard, 3 times you go around. But during Chaturmasa, it's recommended 4. Because in Chaturmasa, you're supposed to do more. You know, especially Kartik. Maybe if we don't follow Chaturmasa, we follow Kartik Vrata. So during that time, we do more. Just like an Ekadasi, because of its auspiciousness, we do more. Then we get more benefit. Just like you're in the Dham, you get 1,000 times benefit. So we're very enthusiastic to do more service, because then we get even more benefit. So Ekadasi is like that, Chaturmasi is like that. The Purushottam Masa is like this. During these times, we do more. So circumambulating means you go 4 times. Then it's considered you've gone around the whole universe. Because the 3 times you go around, that's Bhurbhuva Swa. The higher, the middle, and the earthly planetary systems. Now then, but the 4th then is like going around the whole universe. Like you have in the yajnas and that, then you worship the Bhurbhuva Swa. But then when it's Mahavyarati, then it does all 3 again together. Om Bhur, Om Bhuva, Om Swa, Om Bhur Bhuva Swa, like that. So that 4th time is considered like very complete, like that. The 3 does, it does everything. Everything's done. Like that 4th makes more. So it says minimum. So one can do 4 times, it says at least 4 times. And then depending upon vow, one can take more. The Prabhupada in the 6th chapter says that some devotees go around many times due to their rutta. Here. 9. One must circumambulate the temple building at least 3 times. In every temple there's an arrangement to go around the temple at least 3 times. Some devotees go around more than 3 times, 10 times, 15 times, according to their vows. Goswamis used to circumambulate Govardhan Hill. So that circumambulating, and also the circumambulating Govardhan Hill, circumambulating Vrindavan, then all this puts Krishna at the center. So this is a very important thing. By following the regulative principles of Chaturmasya, one can very quickly be raised to the platform of devotional service. So the minimum of the Chaturmasya is the no spinach in the first month. I think then no milk, then no yogurt, and no urdal. So that is what is, that's the minimum. So we shouldn't think, well, following that is fanatic. There's 44 rules for following in Chaturmasya. So all it is that Lord Chaitanya has requested at least we follow these four. We may drop the other 40, but these four we should follow. So that's not fanatic. That's like just basic minimum. Just like on Ekadasi you take no grains. That's not considered fanatic. If one, there's so much more one can do, but that's the minimum. Like that, to increase the service. So Chaturmasya, the minimum is that we follow these four and try to increase our hearing and chanting. Like that. Any questions on this?
Yes. And what's the significance of these particular things that you're fasting for?
What's the significance of these particular things? I've heard different, but main seems to be because you're controlling the senses. So, and the health aspects, generally these four are difficult on the system during this time. All of them are very powerful. Spinach is probably one of the most highest things in protein. It's higher than anything else, higher than the non-vegetarian, even higher than the other vegetarian things, the spinach. It's got the most protein in it. But it's not on its own complete. You have to eat it with some grains or some other, you know, some rice, some dal, some chapatis like this. That balances it, then it's very powerful. So it's very strong in the system. It can create a lot of gas and things like this if the system is not strong. Like if you're having a bad stomach or something like that, generally spinach will be taken less because it's so powerful. Then milk and yogurt are also very, very strong. And urdal is also of the grains, of the high quality beans, is considered, it's the highest in protein. You know, within, it's still considered within the realm of edible for humans. Higher is would be like red lentils, which are considered non-vegetarian, or soybeans. Soybeans are not considered non-vegetarian; they're considered animal food. You know, that's what it's for. It's grown around the world to feed animals. And red lentils are considered non-vegetarian. You know, like onions, garlic. So red lentils are in the same. The yellow lentils are all right, but red lentils are. They have too much protein that disturbs the body. Anything that's red many times creates a little bit of problem like that. So the red lentils, there's too much passion besides the protein. How the red came about, I'm not sure. There was some story behind it. I don't remember it. But there's some story behind that red. Why? Because you see many of the different vegetables, they have both the red and green variety. Like in spinach, you get in like in this season, you get red and green spinach that's on the stick. And the puishag, that also comes in red and green. The lentils come in red and green, like this, so they... Then, so basically it's all health. There's one of the vows is to not take any milk or yogurt during the Chaturmasya because too much milk products increases lust. So if you really, like if one is having a lot of trouble with lust, just don't take any milk products. Panchadevita asked that to Prabhupada. He says what to do to control lust. He said take less milk products. And if one's having a problem, take less. If you're taking and it's not a problem, then it's good for the health. But if it creates too much agitation in the mind, just take less. Like that. So during these times, all those, the kartik, the protein, extra protein, and the urdal will create more lust. The milk and yogurt will create more. Plus it throws off the stomach. You'll see during the month that I was told that the month you don't eat spinach because the bugs eat the spinach like anything. It's generally not so good that month anyway. You can already see the bugs are really going for the spinach now. And it's just a few more days till it starts. And then during the month of the yogurt doesn't actually turn into yogurt. Many years when I've been cooking,
you know, for the devotees, and that every day we're making yogurt, and then one day it just doesn't turn right. It turns into something else. It doesn't turn into the regular yogurt, and then someone reminds me that it's the yogurt fast. I've seen that a few times. It's just the bugs don't work. They go on holiday or something. I don't know. You know, they lose their culture and that thing, so they become Australians or something like that. You know, so it's like someone, you know, said, Nisringa Kabacha came in and said, he asked, what's the difference between an Australian and a cup of yogurt? I said, I don't know. He said, the culture. Like that. So whatever, they go. They go south for the Chaturmasya or something. So during that time, these are there. So they're physical. Also, Prajumna once mentioned that the signs, the zodiac signs of the sun's going through at those times are all bad for the health, the different parts of the organs. And generally, it corresponds to that milk yogurt and spinach and the urad dal. He mentioned that. I heard him say that like, you know, 25 years ago or something. So is that, so most of the considerations are that health and senses. Okay. Does that make any sense? The zodiac signs are the same. See, that's the thing, is because it's the zodiac signs that are controlling it. So those will be there. Like I've seen is that there's a certain time, there's certain seasons here in India where like the teeth, you get your teeth hurt. If there's anything wrong, it'll happen at that time. You know, it's boil season, this and that. And I always thought it was just India, but I remember I was in New York, and when that time came for the teeth to, you know, hurt, it's like after that, if you do nothing about it, unless it's something really serious, they just hurt or this or that, when that time's over, it just goes away. It's just the season. And I noticed that in New York, then all devotees were getting bad teeth, this, that. And the amazing thing is in New York, there's 2 weeks there, that's when all the dentists in the city take vacation. You know, so people really miss them. You know, it's like, I don't know how they worked it out, but they did. You know? So, like that. But it's the zodiac sign especially. Means the season also has an effect, but more is the zodiac sign. Okay. Does that make any sense? Maharaji, you got something? It doesn't really become yogurt. There is... But transformation means it has to chemically change. So you just put milk in ras malai, it doesn't change at all. It's still milk with a ton of sugar in it and some water. It has to chemically change. So there has to be something cooked into it. Not put into it, cooked into it. Then you get something else other than the milk. But that's, if you can't do anything else, best is just to avoid. But Achyutananda mentioned that the strict rule is during the no yogurt, that means anything other than milk. Means yogurt, cheese, anything that's not straight milk. And during the milk means you can take anything else but not the milk. Like that. He said that's the strict rule on it. So it just means any transformation of milk you can't take during the yogurt fast. And during the milk fast you can't take milk in its regular state. It has to be transformed. And then more strict than those two is no milk or yogurt during the Chaturmas, you know, or during Karti. That's one of the vratas. It's actually one of the most important of them. There's 5 vratas out of the 44 that specifically mention going to Golok Vrindavan for, you know, or, you know, they give more spiritual benefit, and that's one of them. butter. That, if you want to be very strict on that, but it doesn't seem to. That's in other vratas. See, the other vratas, then they go on the eat on the. There is, the first is nothing deep fried. Then the next is nothing that's been cooked in butter, or cooked in ghee or oil. So that would mean you could use it, but you don't cook it in it. Just like dal, you boil the dal and you put a chance at the end. Like you boil the dal, take it off the fire, make a chance, throw it in. It's still considered uncooked. It's considered raw food. Right? Or a chapati, you cook the chapati and then afterwards you put some ghee on it. That's considered uncooked. Or rice, you boil the rice and then afterwards you put some ghee on it. That's considered uncooked. So also vegetables, like if you just steam them or something and then put some butter on it or put a chance on it, that's considered uncooked. So when it says eat uncooked foods, it doesn't mean salad. It means food that has not been cooked with the ghee in the beginning. Like if you make a chance, then you put in the vegetables, that's called cooked. If you cook the vegetables and put the chance after, that's called uncooked. So that's the next one down. Then the next after that is just no ghee or oil at all. Because when you cook the ghee in it, it's harder to digest. That's called guru pak. Guru means heavy. And when it's afterwards, it means it's called lagu. So it means it's light. But, so this is there. That's what it mentions in stalling of Gopal, Madhavendrapuri in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It said they fed the Brahmins with cooked foods. That means everything was cooked in ghee. It doesn't necessarily mean deep fried. It just means that the ghee was put first. Or like you're boiling the rice, you put some ghee in the rice. When you cook it, that's cooked food. You know, or you make puris or paratas like this, where the ghee is there first. Or the sabjis, you put the ghee first. Or dal, you put the chance and then cook the dal. Or you'll boil the dal and then after make a heavy chance and then put the dal into that and then cook it in there. In this way, generally they do that with like thick dal. So that's all called cooked foods. And generally in North India, the tradition when they invite Brahmins to the house, Grihasthas are inviting, they'll only give cooked food like that. No, because it carries less karma. The Brahmins just won't eat uncooked. They won't go to somebody's house and eat rice. It's just they don't do it. In North, if they eat rice at your house, it's considered a great honor. You know, you must be a very close friend or something like this. Otherwise, they won't do it. Because rice carries uncooked grains, then carry the karma, while cooked grains carry only the consciousness. Like that. So they won't eat uncooked food. Plus, it's considered a higher standard. You know, just like when you cook for the Lord, you'll cook very, very nicely. So when you're feeding Brahmins for some special thing, you'll always cook something very, very nice. Because they eat on behalf of the Lord. They eat and speak. So it's just considered a better standard of worship of the Lord if you feed the Brahmins with cooked foods. Any other questions?
Okay. Archana. Archana means worship of the deity in the temple. By executing this process, one confirms himself to be not the body but spirit soul. In the 10th canto, 81st chapter, verse 19 of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is told how Sudama, an intimate friend of Krishna's, while going to the house of a brahmana, murmured to himself, "Simply by worshipping Krishna, one can easily achieve all the results of heavenly opulence, liberation, supremacy over the planetary systems of the universe, all the opulences of this material world, and the mystic power of performing the yoga system. The events leading to Sudama's murmuring this statement are as follows. Sri Krishna had ordered his friend Sudama to go to a Brahmin's house and ask for some food. The Brahmins were performing a great sacrifice, and Sri Krishna told Sudama to plead with them that he and Balaram were feeling hungry and needed some food. When Sudama went there, the Brahmins refused to offer anything, but the wives of the Brahmins, upon hearing that Sri Krishna wanted some foodstuff, immediately took many palatable dishes and went to offer them to Sri Krishna. In the Vishnu Rahasya, also it is stated, any person within this world who is engaged in the worship of Vishnu can very easily achieve the ever-blissful kingdom of God known as Vaikuntha. So by worshipping Krishna, everything is available. Because in the spiritual world, all these different things that we're looking, that people are looking for, heavenly opulence, liberation, supremacy over the planetary systems of the universe, all the opulence of the material world, mystic powers, these are all just happening in the spiritual world. They're all going on. Krishna has all of these. And the devotees also have these. But even though they have these, they're not so interested in these. Because here we're working on our own power, our own opulence, our own enjoyment, our own mystic abilities, our own supremacy. But the devotee doesn't care for that because he has such a nice relationship with Krishna. Who cares for these things? Right? One worries about these things if one has nothing else. If one has a very nice relationship with others, one doesn't worry about too much. One doesn't need. One is satisfied. Because the whole idea of these is simply to give some emotional satisfaction, emotional sensual satisfaction. But if that's already going on in nice relationships, one doesn't care for anything. So in relationship to Krishna, then the reciprocation, the rasa is so wonderful. Even though the devotees have the facility for all these different things, they don't care. They're not interested at all. They don't even use it themselves, even though they could. They leave it up just how the Lord wants the pastimes to unfold. Like that. So the only one that uses the mystic powers and all, Krishna does himself sometimes to increase the rasa, just for fun. You know, he holds up Govardhan Hill or that. But he still uses it in a normal human way. Right? It's raining. You want to protect yourself from the rain, you use an umbrella. So Krishna did. He uses an umbrella, but he just uses a very large one. He uses Govardhan Hill. He doesn't just, you know, some mystic power and then the rain doesn't fall just while he's sitting. He doesn't do like that. Because then it goes out of the realm of the human element. And that's what makes things very, very nice. That one is, that one's controlled by others. So it's just how things will go. It makes for variety. Otherwise, there's not a whole lot of variety. Right? The demigods, it's not as much variety. But for the humans, it's so much. You don't know what's going to happen. So in the past times, when Krishna puts himself under Yoga Maya, so she knows what he wants, and then she just takes care. So many wonderful things happen. You know, like the dham is opening and closing like a lotus. So they'll be in one place, they want to go to another place, and then it just closes. And then they can step from one to the other, and then it opens again. So then they move around very freely, they do all these things, but they're not like flying in the air and doing all these kind of mystic things. They just walk. But Yogamaya, then she uses all these different mystic aspects and makes things work very, very wonderfully. So the devotees aren't interested. So by serving Krishna,
it's all taken care of because you have Krishna. He has all these things. Yogamaya is using these things. And the devotee is just interested to see how Krishna wants things done. He wants to take a bath, you go get some water. All these different things. You need some milk, you go to a Sarabi cow. You need some fruit, you go to the Kalpa Viksha trees. You know, so they don't care for anything. In a discussion between Srup Damodar and Ramananda, Srup Damodar and Srivas Pandit, then they were discussing about Vaikuntha and Goloka and Vrindavan. So So then Srivas Panda was pointing out that how wonderful is Vaikuntha, its opulences, everything is very, very nice. Well, Vrindavan is just some sticks and some leaves and, you know, a few bushes and a river and, you know, like that, a hill, and, you know, nothing overly opulent. While Vaikuntha was very special because the Lord was there and he's being worshipped in great reverence and so much opulence and, you know, something very nice. It's just, Vrindavan is just so simple. And then Sri Damodar, then he countered that the dust of Vrindavan, that's Chintamani from which all of the wealth of opulence of Vaikuntha comes. And from a Kalpavriksha tree, you can get anything. It's not that you can just get fruit. You ask for anything, you can get it. You want a palace, it'll come. It'll give. But the devotees are so satisfied in their rasa with Krishna, they just ask for some fruit. And the Sarabi cows, they can give anything. And just where is it? When Vishishta and Vishwamitra, then from the Sarabi cows, so much food and facilities for Vishwamitra and his whole army to stay. She didn't just give milk, she gave so many things. But the residents of Vrindavan, they don't care. They just take a little milk like that and make something for Krishna, some sandesh or some sweet rice. Like that. So they're very satisfied. So in this way, then the discussion went back and forth.
So the archon, then the important thing is that it's being done for Krishna. Like that. This is the real, the worship is Krishna as a person. It's not the ritual. The ritualistic Brahmins, they were doing the ritual, and by the ritual they were going to please the Lord. The wives of the Brahmins understood that it's not the ritual that's important, it's that the service to the Lord. So the Lord is here asking for something, so you just give it to him. The Brahmins were going to take the same preparation and offer it into the fire. Then through that ritual, then it'll go through the fire and then all these different things, and then it may indirectly get to the Lord. But here, the wives of the Brahmins took the same offering and just gave it directly to Krishna. So the deity worship then gives all perfection. It's whatever any other systems are trying to perform, the worship of the deity accomplishes all of that. Any questions on this?
Well, it's like, how does that tie in with Kala Vajrasrita, how Lord Chaitanya would come, and already he was using such a big portion of his income to worship the Dhamma. And then Lord Chaitanya would want some bananas or some different items, and then there's always some haggling of, and then finally Lord Chaitanya would take it. So it's that same kind of dealing where ultimately he's so attracted by the love of Mr. Lord that item almost becomes irresistible.
Mm. Yes. Because it's the affection that in which it's offered. Either the affection of just natural spontaneous love for the Lord, or affection for the Lord shown through the medium of following the rules and regulations very nicely according to the directions of the Guru Sadhu and Shastra. So it's either dutiful performance of duty with Krishna as the center, or spontaneous like that. In any case, then that affection, then Krishna becomes attracted by it. Because everything that's happening is just a medium to show that affection. That's all. It's just an excuse to exchange. Just like you have some friends, so they have their relationship of friendship. There has to be something to do to show that friendship. So they say, hey, why don't we go out and do something? So in doing that, it's only for enhancing that relationship. That's all. It's not the thing, it's, you know, it may be fun, but the thing point was is that they did that together and they shared that together. So that created the exchange. So the activities are for increasing the exchange, the rasa. That's the purpose. So all the different activities the Lord does as pastimes are only for that purpose. They're only mediums. The thing itself is not important. You know, so it's not what we're offering that's important. It's the mood in which it's offered. But we don't just make up our own system. Krishna's already made up the system of exchange. He's already established the five rasas and established how things function. You know, you drop things, they go down. It's just the way Krishna likes it. You know, water is wet, fire is warm and gives light. You know, sugar is sweet, salt is salty. You know, like this, you use fire, you can cook things. You know, when you sleep, you lay down, unless you're a horse. But like this, he's made these things so that they function like that. So we don't have to make up something. We just have to follow. Therefore, the rules and regulations, it just makes it easy. You don't have to worry about it. This is the medium through which you do it. You may have to worry in the beginning to learn the rules and regulations, because we don't know. If we grow up in the actual Vedic culture, all these things are very natural. It just seems like so many rules and regulations if we don't grow up in the culture like that. Then it seems like something completely different. You know, but those in the Vedic culture can't necessarily relate to the, you know, Western, the non-Vedic culture, how it functions, how the rasas exchange. You know, like you have two friends, they're really good friends, and then they start yelling and screaming at each other and, you know, this and that, and slamming doors and this and that, and so on, saying so many bad things, and 5 minutes later they're best of friends. So those who follow the Vedic culture can't figure that one out at all. you know, like that, or like you see in the what do you call it, you have, you know, siblings, and they hate each other. They're yelling and screaming and always harassing and pinching and poking and just bothering each other the max, but you can't separate them. They have to be together. You know? So followers of the Vedic culture can't understand that. You know? They're together because they like each other. The older ones take care of the younger then follow the older ones, and there's camaraderie between the equals, and they're all part of the family, and they have common, you know, common parents, common everything that. So therefore there's nice fraternity there. But where they can't stand each other, but, you know, they know each other so well that others they can't, you know, harass and interact in such ways. So therefore they stick together. It just can't be understood. You don't like them, you go somewhere else. Like that. So certain aspects of the non-Vedic can't, so it goes either both ways. It just can't be understood.
What about Maharaj, where some devotee of the Lord, he really is devoted to the Lord, but they have an offering? You take the case of Sudama Vipra or Raghunath Das Goswami, and personally they feel that offering is not good enough for the Lord, but somehow the Lord, due to those affectionate dealings, he seems to be insatiable for that chipped rice or that rice that even the cows in the street have rejected. So, I mean, how do we see that? Because the offering itself, you really feel is imbued with that bhakti, because the person who was going to offer it then thinks, oh, this chipped rice is really not good enough. But then the Lord insists, you brought something for me, what is it? So what is actually the factor there? Is it again the relationship?
It's the relationship. You could hear? Yeah, it's the relationship. Totally it's the relationship. Because this is what Raghunath Das eats. You know, it's prasad. So therefore the Lord wants to taste. What is this nectar that you are eating that you're not sharing with anyone else? Because, you know, friends share this, that. So what is this? It's just a way to create the atmosphere. So you seemingly create a situation of where you're, you know, upset with someone else or surprised or this or that, just to create, you know, some interaction. But it's very gentle. You know, it's not meant. Like you see, it's anger, this or that. It's not meant. Just like a small child is playing with something. You've told them don't play, but they still play. So then you may, you know, with very wide eyes and make a face and make some noise, you know, like that. So the child, because they're very simple, they get scared, you know, because they very external, so they just go what they see. So when they see this, you know, very angry looking face, then they figure you're angry, so then they stop and go off. But so many, I've seen it so many times, so Indians will do that, and then as soon as the kid goes off, then all the adults start laughing, you know, because it was just so funny, the reaction, because the kids also are very everything is very, how do you say, just very, like, overdone, you know? Mm. Like, you know, they're very happy, or they're very upset, and this and that, and, you know. Like, you watch little kids, little babies, they can figure out what's going on. 1 second to the next, they'll be smiling, and then they start to cry, and then they go back to this and this, and they make the funniest faces, you know, because they're smiling because nothing's going wrong, and then something starts to bite them, and then they get this weird look on their face, and then that goes away, and then they're happy again, and then they get an itch, and then, you know, they don't know what's going on in the world, you know. It's like it's so bewildering to them. So it's just, you know, in their mind, they're just supposed to be happy, you know, and then there's all these other things. So like that is that, because they're like this, then they'll deal with them like that, you know. An adult, you wouldn't do that. You would just say, you know, I mean, we've said don't do this, isn't that, you know, or explain, but you can't explain it really, this and that. So you just make a face and then you know, big eyes, and then they get scared, you know. But it's because it may externally get what you want, but it doesn't internally bother them. So the subconscious doesn't get disturbed because internally, the adults who are dealing were doing it affectionately. Mm. Though it looks externally like it wasn't affection, it was anger. Like that. So that child grows up to be very well adjusted and is able to deal with others and deal with children. Well, if the parents get actually angry, you know, in a situation that doesn't require, just because they keep, you know, doing something, they bother them, then externally they're angry, they get the result, but also internally, subconsciously, the kid gets affected. Mm. He gets affected, and that will affect him later. He'll have difficulty dealing with younger children or working with others like that, because it was actual anger. It wasn't just you show externally, like a drama, you show that, then you get the result. Like an actor on the stage, he's feigning anger, feigning sorrow, or this or that. It gets a reaction from the audience. But you know he's not angry, or he's not happy, or this, or he's just acting. So in the same way, it's just the parents, they act in such a way that it brings out the proper qualities from the children, you know, or amongst each other, like this. It's just, it's the duty. This is what you do. So so in the same way, that's just the reflection of the pastimes. Because the pastimes, Krishna, he's Atmarama, but all these pastimes are for medium, so that he and the devotees can exchange, and it's always different. You know, it always changes. So the rules are all there, just so that we can understand this is what is done. This is how you please the Lord. You know, like the Lord, he likes to eat in a certain way at certain times in certain situations. You know, like this. So you follow those, and it's pleasing to the Lord. You're doing because you know this is the Lord's rules. This will please the Lord. I want to please the Lord, so I follow these rules. You know, and if we don't want to follow so much, we'd rather do it in our own, how we like, when we like, what we like. Because it's being offered to the Lord accepts it. But it's not considered as high as when it's done here. But then you have these cases like you're stating here, when the devotion is so great, they're actually on the platform of very advanced of love, of prema, where whatever they do, that Krishna himself may create the situation for the exchange. You know, so therefore he'll go and take the chipped rice from Sudama, you know, or take it from Raghunath Das, or that you know, like that. So it's just on whether we're on the path to prema or on prema. So it's like that. On the path in sadhana bhakti must be according to the rules and regulations, but it's whether it's with spontaneous devotion, or whether it is with the devotion of following the rules nicely. And then prema, then that's just out of spontaneous, you know, pure affection. So, they always like to do that. Because it bothers the other person. It's fun. But here it's out of affection. You're not actually trying to bother. It's just to create some exchange. You know, he would take Sridhar's water pot. So he had an iron water pot. He was so poor. He didn't have, you know, a copper one, or, you know, some other. He only had an iron one. And so Lord Chaitanya, because Sridhar was not that, you know, typical Bengali, wasn't so tall, and Lord Chaitanya being quite tall, you know, like 7 feet, so then he would grab his water pot, and Sridhar would try to keep him from taking the water pot, because Lord Chaitanya is so tall, and he can just hold it up above his head and drink, and then Sridhar is trying to grab it, he can't, so. Like this, the Lord is, you know. So these rasas come from the Lord. So it's in connection with the Lord everybody's enjoying, the Lord and the devotee. You bring this into the material world where the older brother takes something from the younger brother and he eats it while he's trying to get it and this and that. Then nobody really enjoys, you know, like that. It's just annoyance. It's just harassment. There's no rasa, you know. Or it's lower rasa, you know. Ghastliness, horror, you know, fear, hate, you know, like that.
It's interesting also that the Lord, if you look from the absolute perspective, can't actually be stealing either, because he's a supreme proprietor.
Yeah.
So where he seems to be stealing butter or stealing anything, but actually he's the real owner of it.
Yeah. You see, the gopis don't care if he steals the butter. It's just for rasa, because they're in the parental rasa. Then, you know, their relationship is to benefit the children, either by positive affection or by correction and these things. And then, you know, between the elder gopis, then, you know, discussion of the children, discussion of Krishna's pastimes or how, you know, this or that. So they go to Mother Yashoda because Krishna should be chastised, but they don't really care. When she actually goes, that she says she's going to chastise, no, don't worry about it, it's okay. You know, like that. It nourishes the rasa, that's all. You know, to keep Krishna from stealing, to find him when he's stealing, and all these different things like that. It's just part of the exchange.
When Lord Chaitanya is a young boy, as Nimai, he's appropriating items for worship on the banks of the Ganga. Is there any criteria there that those are, you know, appropriate items and the person's got the right mental? I mean, if somebody was a Mayavadi and had paraphernalia, would he still?
Oh, no, not at all.
No, he wouldn't appropriate.
Wouldn't care at all.
He's actually taking those garlands and sandalwood paste at all.
These young girls, their business is worshipping Lord Shiva or Uma, like this, for getting a husband. So in their mind, they'd actually like to marry Nimai. But, you know, basically maximum, you know, one of them is going to be able to do that. So whatever they're doing, and so he just comes because he's the purpose of that whole ritual is in their heart. They'd like to get Lord Chaitanya as their husband. At the same time, is that his expansion and transformation is Lord Shiva. So their worship of him is actually meant, of Shiva is actually meant for him. So by worshiping him, it's already done. You know. So he comes and he takes these things and bothers them. It's the same as in the Katyayana. That whole thing is stealing the clothes. So here he steals the paraphernalia. And so, same kind of thing. So they're offering, they got to give to him. Though, you know, in the rasa they have to make like they're completely annoyed and disgusted and all these different things. That's just the nature of the energy is flickering. So it has to act in this way. So they have to look like they're very upset in that, but they're very happy. Anything else?
Rendering service to the Lord. It is stated in the Vishnu's Rahasya, any person who can arrange for service to the Lord in the same way that a king is given service by his attendants is surely elevated to the abode of Krishna after death. Actually, in India, the temples are just like royal palaces. They are not ordinary buildings, because the worship of Krishna should be performed in just the way that a king is worshipped in his palace. So in Vrindavan, there are many hundreds of temples wherein the deity is worshipped exactly like a king. In the Naradiya Purana, it is stated, if a person stays in the Lord's temple, even for a few moments, he can surely achieve the transcendental kingdom of God. The conclusion is that those who are rich men in society should construct beautiful temples and arrange for the worship of Vishnu, so that people may be attracted to visit such temples and thereby be offered the opportunity of dancing before the Lord or chanting the holy name of the Lord, or else of hearing the holy name of the Lord. In this way, everyone will be given the chance to elevate himself to the kingdom of God. In other words, even a common man, simply by visiting such a temple, will be able to obtain the highest benedictions, not to mention the devotees who are constantly engaged in the service of the Lord in full Krishna consciousness. In this connection, there is a statement in the fourth canto, 21st chapter, verse 31 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein King Prithu says to his subjects, "My dear citizens, please note that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is actually the deliverer of all the fallen conditioned souls. No demigod can perform this act of delivering the conditioned souls, because the demigods themselves are conditioned. A conditioned soul cannot deliver another conditioned soul. Only Krishna or his bona fide representative can deliver him. The Ganges water, which is flowing down from the toe of Lord Vishnu, falls upon the earthly planet and other planets, and thereby delivers all the conditioned sinful living entities. So what need is there to speak of the deliverance of persons who are always engaged in the service of the Lord? There's no doubt about their liberation, even if they have stocks of sinful activities from many, many births. Even if they have stocks of sinful activities from many, many births. In other words, a person who is engaged in the worship of the deities can minimize his stock of sinful reactions coming from many, many previous births. This process of worshipping the deity has already been described, and one should try to follow these rules and regulations seriously. So the rendering service, we try to render with whatever is the best that we have. So someone who has more wealth should do more. Someone who has less may do less. Whatever is their capacity, they must do. The best should be offered, because the residents of Vrindavan will always be getting the best for the Lord. So if we want to become a resident of Vrindavan and follow in their footsteps, then we must also want the best, whatever we have. So in Vrindavan, then they have whatever is there. You know, they have milk, they have fruits, they have flowers. They can make some nice arrangements in various situations, either in Nanda Baba's palace or in the forest of Vrindavan. They can make from simple things that they have there. In Dwarka, then kingly opulence will be there. You know, Vaikuntha also, even more. So it's the mood of just whatever you have, it's the best. You try to arrange the best for the Lord. But that is what one is trying to do. So either one is making the arrangements, like someone has a lot of facility, a lot of money, they may build temples, they may support the worship. Then from that, other people can go to that temple, they can see that worship, they can be benefited then by hearing and chanting and dancing before the deity, taking prasadam. So these aspects are there. Is that somebody gets the benefit by arranging all that, someone else gets benefit by offering it, someone else gets benefit by taking part in it. So everyone is benefited, whatever they can do. That's the essential point. What you can do for the Lord, do that. That's the main item. So rendering service according to our ability, then we should try to do something, and it should be the best. Like that. Prabhupada when this point is being made, the sixth chapter, then it says not that we have so much stuff for ourselves. And then in
is that when you're offering things to the Lord, it's not that you are offering something opulent, but it's not as opulent as how we are living. So it's like whatever is the best, we're getting that for the Lord. Like that. It should be comparable to our standard of living, whatever we consider. And then within that, that should be the best of that. That is the idea. Any questions on this? Yeah. Yes. It's different from the clothes that the deity has worn. The clothes that the deity has worn, then that is the deity's clothes, and then we have gotten his remnants. Here, the idea is whatever we have, it belongs to the Lord, so we're offering to the Lord for to be used in his service. So you just purify it and show it to the Lord. Like that, so it's just you're taking his blessings that you are getting new cloth, or you're doing this, or doing that. In other words, everything is then brought before the Lord, whatever you're doing. You know, like that, whatever you're giving in charity, whatever you're eating, you know, you're going somewhere. This, that, it's all then first brought to the Lord for his blessings, like that. So basically, what this is blessed cloth. It's not maha cloth as such. Because if it's maha, then you have to be very careful, like that. But this is just, it's given to the Lord for his blessings. Is that? Yes. It's offered, but it's offered for use in the service that we're going to wear it. It's not that, you know, he's going to wear it and then we're going. It's being offered to him that it's his service. The same principle as the whole house is offered, or whatever we have is offered, is it belongs to the Lord. As Bhimala Prasad was saying, is everything's the Lord's. So then we just are. In other words, it's a way that we recognize that it is, you know, by taking the trouble to show it to the Lord. Like you go out and buy some new pots and pans for the kitchen, you show it to the Lord that we have bought these pots for use in your service, or some new furniture. You know, this is there. You know, for guests are coming and we don't have, you know, some arrangements, so we've gotten these for your guests that come. Like this, it's just, it's like giving a report, you know, the deity report. But it's, you know, it's, you can see the stuff rather than just saying, oh yes, we bought you some pots, and you're showing them the pots. But it's in your house. You know, we won't take all this stuff and traipse on down to the temple and drop them there on the stage in front of Radha Madhava and say, you know, hey, you know, like that. This is stuff you do in the house. Singing. In the Linga Purana, there is a statement about glorifying and singing about the Lord. It is said there, a Brahmana who is constantly engaged in singing the glories of the Lord is surely elevated to the same planet as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna appreciates this singing even more than the prayers offered by Lord Shiva. So when we're singing the glories of the Lord, then this is very much, so someone who is, you know, very pure platform in devotion sings for the Lord, then this is very much appreciated. You know, so even more than the singing of Lord Shiva. Shiva's very, very expert. So one story just on, you know, just on his expertise is that there was a Brahmana, he was, let me say, yeah, he was worshipping the deity he was going to Shiva temple, he was worshipping Lord Shiva. And I think he used to sing a bit for the deity and like that, you know, like that. He used to sing something. Then this, at some point, then this big, you know, Digvijay musician, you know, you always have, somebody always has to prove that they're the best, right? It seems to be common annoyance in many of the Vedic stories. So he was coming, and he was like the most expert singer. And if you, when he'd sing, if you couldn't sing better than him, then you had to, you know, become his servant. It was like a challenge. And, you know, he'd make them, you know, they'd all be doing menial service and this and that. So this guy was traveling with about 50 servants, you know. So when they came and he put a challenge to the kingdom, then they didn't know. None of the musicians would sing in that. And so they all decided, well, you know, from here, we'll all be defeated anyway. So all the big court musicians and this and that. So at the temple, that there's a temple, there's this some, you know, very poor Brahmin who's there. So why don't we say he'll sing? You know, that way then, you know, we'll still be here. Otherwise, you know, they're telling the king, you're going to lose one of us to sing for you. So better we lose this guy, you know, like that. So then it was announced. It was announced that this singing contest would happen the next day, and that this Brahmin from the temple, he was the one that was going to do the singing. And then he heard about it, and he didn't know what to do. So he went to he was sitting there in the temple, and he went to Lord Shiva and says, you know, I sing for you and this and that, but I don't know how to sing this big Vijay. So what to do? So Aditi said, don't worry, I'll take care of it. So then the next morning, when the Digvijay Pandit arrived, you know, at the special guest house and all this, you know, put up by the king, then out in the front, laying out kind of in the courtyard there, it was kind of not so well-kept looking person, just lying on the ground and looking very morose. You know, and the Digvijay is inside his house. Now he doesn't care for the guy out there. You know, he just thinks it's some, you know, street person and that. And then while he's in, you know, discussing what ragas and this and that and all, you know, technical stuff with everybody else, and you know what new things he's going to do to completely defeat this new kingdom, he hears this amazing singing coming from outside. You know, amazing. He's never heard anything like it. You know, it's like that. So they go out. He says, you know. So he goes outside to see on the veranda, and then he sees this person just lying there, asleep. And when they yawn, then this amazing music comes out. That it's just like he's flabbergasted. So you know, after some time, then this person wakes up. You know, another yawn and all this music and everything. And then he asks, "Who are you? And where did you learn this music?" He says, "Oh, I learned. I'm a student of this Brahmin, you know, the one who stays in the temple that year, you know, and I'm such a useless student, you know, I'm so bad, he kicked me out. He won't even teach me anymore. He said, I'm so bad, you know, like that. I can't keep up with the other students who are learning much more advanced things than I am. I only just some basic, I can't even sing at all." Digvijay said, "Well, if this is the guys he rejects, and what's he going to be like?" So then the Digvijay packed his bags and that, and discreetly left the kingdom without like that. So that's Lord Shiva's music. And so then here we find that Krishna is more pleased than hearing that music. If a brahmana, you know, is constantly engaged in singing the glories of the Lord. Like that. So that's more impressive than when Lord Shiva sings on an occasion. Is a Brahmin who is always chanting the Lord's glories. Any questions on this? Like that. Yeah. So singing is a very, very important. That's why it's such a major part of our process. Process of hearing and chanting. So this chanting then is always then singing. We see the Vedic system is everything's music. Every word is a song. Every step is a dance. So it's the combination of sound and meter. Everything works according to that. So you see the shlokas are like that. Music is like that. It's all, these are very nice. So we sing for the Lord, and then there's shlokas, and shlokas have a tune, they have a meter. because they're based on the music. Like that. Music is first, then all these things come. So according to that, then you get the ragas and notes and all that. So the different, the meters, all these different meters, like we have different, you know, anastup and malini and all these different things of how many syllables it have and what's long and short. So that long and short and the syllables connects to the tals of music. And then what notes you use, that's all connected back to the ragas.
As if a pujari is doing an arti and there's no one else there, of course it says where it's impossible to sing, one can ring the bell, and that's pleasing to the sound. But is it possible for the pujari to sing while...
Yeah, yeah. That's very nice. They can sing. If there's no one else there, they can sing. Generally, they'll concentrate on offering the arti to someone else to sing. That way more people are engaged in the worship. But if not, if no one's there, then they can sing. You know? Especially if you're doing, you know, it's not like the last, sometimes the 8:30 at night or 8:30 in the morning, you know, 4 in the afternoon.
Mm.
These are many times they're not well attended, so then one can sing oneself. That's very nice. What about a kirtan? Yeah? One can do that. I can also put. Point is, there should be some kirtan, some singing. So you either sing yourself or put on a tape, but it should be a tape that you know would be that you would think would be pleasing to the Lord. You know, you would put on what do you call it? You know, Prabhupada tape or some nice bhajans. You know, you wouldn't put on Shelter or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You would put on a rock tape, and you know. Because those are meant for us. Those aren't meant for Krishna. So it's like that one would.
What time is it? 6:27.
Then next is Samkirtan. When a person loudly chants the glories of the Lord's activities, quality, form, etc., his chanting is called Sankirtana. Sankirtana also refers to the congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord. In the Vishnu Dharma, there is a statement glorifying the process of congregational chanting. My dear King, this word Krishna is so auspicious that anyone who chants this holy name immediately gets rid of the resultant actions of sinful activities from many, many births. That is a fact. There is the following statement in Chaitanya Charitamrita. A person who chants the holy name of Krishna once can counteract the resultant actions of more sinful activities than he is able to perform. A sinful man can perform many, many sinful activities, but he is unable to perform so many that he cannot be wiped out by a single uttering of Krishna. In the 7th canto, 9th chapter, verse 18 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Pallad offers the following prayers to the Lord. My dear Lord Nrisimha, if I can be elevated to the position of your servant, then it will be possible for me to hear about your activities. You are the supreme friend, the supreme worshipable deity. Your pastimes are transcendental, and simply by hearing them one can counteract all his sinful activities. Therefore, I shall not care for all those activities, because simply by hearing about your pastimes, I shall get rid of all the contamination of material attachment. There are many songs about the Lord's activities. For example, there is the Brahma Samhita, sung by Lord Brahma, Narada Pancharatra, sung by Narad Muni, and Srimad Bhagavatam, sung by Sukadev Goswami. These songs are heard by any person. He can easily get out of the clutches of material contamination. There should be no difficulty in hearing these songs of God. They are coming down from many, many millions of years ago, and people are still taking advantage of them. So why, at this time, should one not take full advantage and thus become liberated? In the first canto, 5th chapter, verse 22 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Narad Muni tells his disciple Vyasadeva, My dear Vyas, you should know that persons who are engaged in executing austerities and penances, studying the Vedas, performing big sacrifices, chanting the hymns of the Vedas,
speculating on transcendental knowledge, and performing charitable functions, have for all their auspicious activities simply to gain a place in the association of devotees and chant the glories of the Lord. It is indicated here that chanting about and glorifying the Lord is the ultimate activity of the living entity. So the Sankirtan can be done alone or with many. So it's loud chanting, because loud chanting means one, all our senses, body, everything's being engaged, and others can hear it. So others also get engaged. So this becomes then Sankirtan. And then when this is more get together, then it becomes more complete. So one person is Sankirtan, if they're loudly chanting the glories of the name. And then the more persons, then it becomes greater Sankirtan. That it just increases the Sankirtan. So that. So here he's saying, if I can glorify the Lord, then I can be elevated to the position of actually getting to associate with the devotees. And by associate with the devotees, then I will constantly hear the Lord's glories. So hearing of the Lord's glories, this is the perfection of life. That's the whole point. The Hare Krishna movement is for the purpose of getting people to hear and chant about the Lord's glories. There's nothing else. Because we are conditioned in so many ways, and others are conditioned in so many ways, then we have so many different activities that we perform or take up to engage all those in the Lord's service, because we're not willing to chant 24 hours a day. But the essence of chanting, that always must maintain. Otherwise, we may get distracted by these other things and forget what they're for. So they're always for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. And in this way, we get the association of devotees where we can hear and chant nicely about the Lord's glories. Another point being made here is that by hearing once, just one chanting of the holy name, it can destroy more sins than the person can commit. So it doesn't matter how sinful they are, chanting the holy name can remove all of that. So by that chanting, it's removed. The difficulty is because of our habit of enjoying the material world, that takes time to go away. Therefore, we commit things again. So if somebody does something, it's new. By chanting, the old stuff is already gone. Right? Just what Krishna wants to leave with the prarabdha, just so that we remember him. Because if he takes everything away, there's every chance that we'll become bewildered by that resultant happiness, you know, that we'll forget him. So he leaves something there just to remind us that this is the material world. But otherwise it's gone. But what it takes time is practice, is we have to be convinced ourselves, you know, by hearing and chanting in the association of devotees and, you know, and rendering service, that we give up these desires for sense gratification that create our doing all kinds of nonsense. Because we like doing these things. So therefore, it takes time for us to give that up. Right? Krishna doesn't, it means the sinful thing, reactions themselves, he takes that away. That's easy. One chanting, it's done. Right? So that is important, that's understood, because then we see if someone is doing something wrong, then what it is that they've done something wrong, they have to be corrected. What is the purpose of that correction? This is a very essential point. So the on the mundane platform is you must correct them for the sin that they have done. They've done something wrong, you must correct that. Because you do an activity, it gives a good or bad result. You know, if it gives a good result, nobody complains. If it gives a bad result, they must be purified of that bad result. Right? Then an activity is given that's supposedly going to purify them of that, some kind of punishment. But by one chanting, that's already gone. You know, that's history. You know, let alone chanting 16 rounds. So if that is the mentality, it means we actually don't understand the devotional process. What it is someone does something wrong,
then what we're having to do is correct them from having this mentality. So to correct them from the mentality, we must find a devotional activity that is going to engage them in the Lord's service, that it purifies their desire. So you don't stop service. You give them specific service that's going to, it's going to increase their attraction to Krishna and decrease their attraction to whatever's the problem. We would see this would be Prabhupada's method for correcting a living entity. So that is the process. But if we think that there is some moral problem that has to be corrected, then we're not understanding the chanting of the holy name. It's that simple. Right? The two may look the same, right? But it's the mentality. Just like we offer something to Krishna, it's not what we offer, it's the mentality. Right? So in the same way, it's not what we give somebody to correct themselves, it's the mentality in which we give it. Because if we give it as they've done something materially wrong, we give it something to correct them materially, it's only going to have a material result. And prayaschitta, we see in the sixth canto of Bhagavatam, is considered, you know, useless. Because it is. If prayaschitta works so good, this material world would be full of good people. Right? Pious, nice, good people. Because everybody's done prayaschitta. Everybody's gone to hell. Everybody's done so many different things and punished. But it's still full of criminals. Right? Therefore, prayaschitta doesn't really do anything. But you have to have something to do. Everybody knows something's right and wrong. And something wrong must be punished. Something right must be rewarded. So not having a spiritual system, therefore, this material system is given. But the actual system is engaging them in devotional service, that it will purify them of these problems. Right? That is the thing. So it's a very subtle point. So that if that mentality is right, the person will feel enlivened, because it will be explained to them philosophically. It will be shown how this is going to, his devotional activity is going to purify them. And now it's up to them, do they accept it or not? You know? If they want to be in the association, a close association of devotees, they have to correct themselves, and this is the process. And if they don't, then they're free to do as they like. So correction must be there, but it must be based on spiritual principles. Like that. No material solution has ever solved a material problem. It doesn't work. And no material solution solves a spiritual problem. A spiritual solution solves both spiritual and material problems. So it's a matter of faith.
Okay. This is trying to understand it clearly. So really the only correction that is being given is to correct the mentality.
Yeah, to correct the mentality. What happens is sometimes someone's so gross, then you have to engage the body also.
But that's still to correct the mentality.
The whole purpose is just to correct the mentality. Because that's the whole process. Outside it may look, you know, they may be doing some work or some physical this or that. The whole point is that if it's just, okay, you've been bad, you do this. You know, you're a nonsense, so here, suffer, do this. You never correct anybody. Never. But this is the most common mentality. Most common. You know, like just like 99.999%. The real thing is your heart is contaminated. You have to increase your devotional service, especially in this particular area. So therefore, this activity, though it may or may not be so palatable, is devotional service. And by doing this, it's felt by the, you know, the devotees that this will help you in your purification. You know, so therefore, we're requesting that you take this up and do this. You know, if you want to stay in the close association of devotees. If you don't, then you don't have to do it. You just go somewhere else. So it may be the same activity, but it depends very much which angle it comes from. Like that. So this whole point of correct mentality is across the board. It's not that it just you apply it in some area and not in another. It always acts fire is always hot, no matter what the situation, how it's being used, it's always hot. Water is always wet, no matter what the situation, how it's being used. So the same way is that if you want to correct somebody, it always has to be done through devotional service. Otherwise, you know, it'll never correct anybody. Never has, never will. Right? And you use mundane processes, you do not increase faith. You decrease faith.
Are the material solutions always going to be temporary?
Yeah, that's a very good point.
It's just never going to...
Yeah, that's a very important point. Because the point is that the difficulties that somebody has are there for a long time. They're not just something new from this life. So they need very deep solutions. And those can only come from devotional service. Because only devotional service can connect all the different mentalities that have been there from lifetime after lifetime. Because it deals with the mind like that. Prayaschitti doesn't really deal with the mind. Generally you see it's always something physical, external. They say it will correct. But that it has to be proven that it will. Yes, Mataji. Yes, means that that is that by performing, how you say, means that a reaction, material reaction will come. If you steal, a reaction will come. So by cutting off the hand, that reaction won't come. You know, because that may affect them in their future lives and create all kinds of difficulties. Like that. So by taking care of this life, it won't go into the next life. So that is there, but we see that it is... It doesn't correct their mentality to steal. Means they may, if they're a little bit intelligent, they'll understand, well, they've only got two hands and they stole once and lost one of them, they steal again and lose the other. So it may slow them down, but it doesn't necessarily get rid of the desire. That's the problem. It may have stopped the person from stealing, you know, unless he grabs it with his teeth or something, and whatever. But it doesn't necessarily remove the desire to steal. So only devotional service can do that. So that's the point, is if someone does something wrong and you give some punishment, unless it is something that's going to develop them in devotional service, you are not going to get rid of the desire. You may do something in which they will feel reluctant to perform the activity, and we may feel good that we did that. You know, but that's not what this movement's for. I mean, it's like we solve the $1 million problems. The two paisa problems are automatically taken care of. But we have to solve that. One may say, well, so many problems are there, this and that. But if we look at it, what are the solutions we've actually used? You know, what do we do to correct? Right. Someone is managing. People don't like his management. Then what do? Same thing they've done for, you know, thousands of Western historical years. Create some politics, throw the guy out. Did we actually... Now, that person is a manager by nature. We have not improved the living entity's engagement in the Lord's service because they're a manager. They have to manage something. We have not given a way to purify. Why? Because we're not pure enough to be able to correct them. If we can't correct ourselves, we can't correct someone else. A manager who can purify his own managerial ability, you'll see they'll take the person and tell them, this is wrong. You have to do this, 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 and they'll correct the person, or at least send them in that direction. Someone who can't purify their own management ability, what is their solution? Remove the person from management. And then you see the next person that sits there, does the same thing. And then they're thrown out. Then the next one. Then they're thrown out. Then the next one. And you can look at it in modern history. You can look at it in our temples. You won't see any difference. But when Prabhupada was here, then a manager did something wrong. He would tell them that this is wrong. Now you go back and manage again and don't do that. You have to know why it's wrong, how you have to remember Krishna, all this and that. You know, the devotees, these are devotees. These are dear to the Lord. You can't deal with them just in any old way. You have to deal properly. Now go do it properly with a proper understanding. Now these are Krishna's devotees. You are a servant. Your service is to serve them. But your service is to manage. Organize it. Tell them what to do. So everyone's got some service to do. Your service is to see that everyone else is engaged in service. Then they become purified. Then they become enlivened. If we just throw them out, then what's it? So like that. Yes, Mati. Yes. Means the chanting will get rid of that also, but because we're so stubborn, we hold on to them. Just the first chanting, the sinful reactions are gone. But many times you'll find devotees, well, how is it possible? And then they'll reconcile the whole thing. Yes, one absolutely pure chanting will do that. Because sinful reactions are so ingrained in us that they're so, you know, it's such an important issue. Like this, that it's seen, you know, that it can't, it's not possible. This person's still doing nonsense. How can all the sinful reactions gone? Therefore, he didn't chant. No, the sinful reactions are gone, but due to his sinful desires, he's still committing more. But whatever he had from before is gone. So what we're trying to do, the anarthas are the, it says the doubts and misgivings. You'll always find Prabhupada saying the doubts and misgivings. You know, they are the problem. So all these different things, then they, because when it says one becomes liberated, means that one has come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. So one has no material desire. So these removing, you know, so much sin from before, means the tendency towards sin. Means that is the hard thing to get out. Means the sinful reaction is the simplest of all, though we take it as the greatest. But the difficulty is the desire for sin. You do a sinful reaction, I mean sinful activity, it creates simultaneously, a few things are created. One, it starts the process of the, how you say? It creates the seed that creates the situation in which you'll enjoy the result. So that's three of them that it creates. The fourth one, which is the very one we don't, you know, generally deal with, is the desire to create more of the same sinful activity. And that's the tough one. Right? So the getting rid of the reaction, that is one name, it's gone. The situations and all that, and the seed, that's more, chanting will get rid of that also. That it'll just do on its own. But the desire for sin, that is the one that we hold on to. And that's what takes so much time, slowly, 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 slowly. Because that's where the doubts and misgivings are. Because we doubt that this process will make us happy, or doubt that it'll fulfill everything, or doubt that it's perfect, or doubt that just one chanting the holy name can get rid of all these things. You know, or misgivings, you know, this, you know, I want this or that, or this person this or that, or why, how come the guru has to be worshipped like this, or sannyasi is this, or why grihasthas get to do that, and you know, who are these brahmacharis, and all that. These are misgivings. You know? So, like this. So those are the difficult things. That's what takes time. So we have to give those up. I mean, so much is going away by our just performing devotional service, that the sinful reactions or the seed and the what do you call it, the situation, the phulan mukha that's growing, that will create it, that has it, leaves a mentality, but the chanting gets rid of that. But so without us even endeavoring, we just chant, that goes. You know, unconsciously it goes. But consciously we have to give up these doubts and misgivings. Yes.
Maharaj, from a certain perspective, it would seem then that we have more faith in the potency of sinful activity,
yes,
than the faith in the potency of the holy name.
Mm.
Maybe because of more association.
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing it for a lot longer. I mean, if we've been chanting the holy name since time immemorial, then we're practicing the process pretty slowly. But sinful activity, that we've been doing since time immemorial. Yes.
Also the chanting destroy that desire as well.
It will, but generally Krishna works in a way that we consciously make that effort. It's just like Krishna creates a situation where we become very much in anxiety. So now we can either turn to Krishna and then give up that desire and give up those things, or we can get very upset. Either at just the situation, or even more, we get upset with the devotees. Why are they doing this to me, putting me through all this? Or get upset with Krishna. Like that, which is, it's not uncommon. Like that. It's not, but the point is one's supposed to give that up. That's the whole point, is that if we can give up, but it's like this. You always use the lightest possible medicine for a disease. You never use something too heavy. Otherwise the body gets used to that. You have to use something heavy to get rid of something light. So a light disease, you use light medicine. Heavy disease, you use heavy medicine. So Krishna is always going to use something light first. Somebody's going to say, you know, you're either going to hear through the grapevine that, you know, somebody was not very happy with our mentality or what we did. You know, then if we think about it and go, oh, okay, yeah. You know, then we start to get rid of that. But if we think, well, what do they know? You know, and then next will come somebody will tell us, but pleasantly, nicely, even like shyly, or not even really wanting to say, but you know, they've heard, so they just say. So we can either take it there or not. Or Krishna creates situations in which it gets very difficult. We can either learn there or not. Or, you know, the whole world will fall apart, you know, on our head. Then it's we take it or not. Like that. Material nature is very expert. You know, she always has something new. You know, what's that saying? It was better when it was worse. You know? She can always make it worse. So whenever we thought it was bad, it was actually better then, you know? Yes.
Well, I think the point you made earlier was very significant when, because we're talking about these, you know, potent activities like chanting, automatically getting rid of these things. But we're making a conscious choice also to cling to these things.
Mm.
So we can't expect that in the light of that use of our free will, that somehow the holy name is going to just still eradicate everything like some nuclear bomb. If we consciously choosing to still hang on to that simple mentality or simple desire, that also we have to take into account.
Yeah.
So it's just again exercise of our free will. We have to give that up. But very tangibly, it's not that, oh well, on some kind of automatic pilot, that will just go away. Not if we consciously cling. So I think a lot of devotees also struggle with that point. You know, oh, I've been 20 years, but still, you know, this is there. But they're not seeing how they're actually clinging to those simple mentalities.
Yeah. That's very important. Also, it's very important in this is that when the whole process of the religiosity and morality and all that are being put in their proper perspective, that it's not taken that we don't care for those things. We don't care for social and moral codes. Mm. No, only the devotee actually can follow them. They actually are religious, actually are moral. They can follow the nicest. But that means when they accept this process and follow it properly. If you follow etiquette, then religious principles are taken care of, morality is taken care of. But must be understood that the spiritual potency is more powerful than that. That's why the emphasis is put on that side. Like that. So, you know, otherwise you see the qualities of Brahman. He's truthful, he's honest, these are all like moral character. So they have the highest moral character. But that is because of their devotional service. Right? Mode of goodness is established when there's the pure goodness is being sought after. Right? Then goodness is there, and then the passion ignorance is in its... On the material platform, passion ignorance are on their smallest manifestation in someone in the mode of goodness. So that means the least kind of material, mundane, sinful desires and activities are going to be there. But as you increase that to pure goodness, then that also goes away. So that's a recommendation. Situated in goodness, then we endeavor for pure goodness. But the philosophy being so vast, you know, you can just speak on, you know, one or a few connected points together. So we have to understand how that connects with the total picture. So it's not that we talk about how a devotee is all, you know, follows all these nice rules nicely. And then when we're talking about how devotional service is beyond that and more powerful, that the other thing becomes rejected. No, you have to see them both together. And it goes very nice. Yes.
This one Ramanuja follower said to me, we say we care for nothing except Krishna prana. So he said, if you don't attain that, then everything goes to hell, because it's not like I will be well behaved, I'll follow Varnash, and I'll still be within the system, but it just couldn't quite get Krishna prana. It's like everything else is useless other than Krishna prana. If I don't get Krishna prana, then I go back to being a devotee.
Mm.
So he said, that's a big danger if you too much state, oh, the only thing worth having is Krishna prana, then that mentality can easily be there, especially with Westerners. Oh, I couldn't get it. That's all about it.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, it's taken that, what, how you say, you have the one, so you don't need anything else. It means you don't need anything else, meaning, but you have a body, the gross and subtle body, you have to be engaged. So that's all engaged according to the proper system of religiosity, morality, sense gratification, and liberation. That's just engaged according to that. But those are all seen as useless unless there's connection to Krishna consciousness. Like that. It's not that they're not there.
Hmm.
You know? So it's just like, we may say, we only care for Krishna Prasad, taking Krishna Prasad is that. But that doesn't mean we don't chew, you know. We don't pick things up and put it in our mouths. We don't swallow, you know. We don't worry about digesting. But the essence of the whole process is accepting prasad.
Hmm.
And by that process, then we maintain the body and the sanat for Krishna's service. But the essential thing is it's not the health and doing all those other things and, you know, chewing 20 times or 50 or 100, depending on which book you read, and all those things. Then it's that we've taken prasad. So in the same way as we've chanted Hare Krishna, we've served Krishna. Therefore, all the other aspects of varnashram and that, those are automatic. Those just go on. But the emphasis is not on those. The emphasis is on devotional service.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Just like taking prasad, the emphasis is that it's prasad. We're honoring prasad. But all the other mundane aspects of engaging the body, you know, is and the mind is going on. You know? That's like, we'll put it in a pleasant atmosphere. For the body, it doesn't matter what is the situation, basically, which you eat, right? As long as it's not unclean, you know? You know, you could be standing up in the banana garden over there and eating, it would be just as good. But but the mind is not satisfied. The subtle body is not satisfied. Mm. So a nice place, you sit down, a nice place, nice atmosphere, nice association, pleasant mood and giving, very free. The mind is satisfied. And then, you know, you chew nicely, you swallow nicely, you don't do things like take a bath, cold bath right after you eat and all that. These are for the body. These are all mundane. So no one ever says we stop doing these because we only care for Krishna Prasad. But somehow or another, we only chant Hare Krishna, we give up all social and moral, you know, activities. So it's a severe inconsistency, very severe. So it's the whole point is the reason so much emphasis is given on giving these things up is because in India people follow them, they're rooted in them. They're fanatically attached to them, like the yogic Brahmins. They're so attached to them that they won't give them up. Even Krishna and Balaram come and ask for something to eat. They say, you know, get out of here. You know, we're doing yogi to worship the Supreme Lord. You know, but the wives of the Brahmins, because of their devotion, could see that we give that up for this hire. But if we're just following the culture of Mlechas, Yavanas, and Chandalas. And then we say, oh, we give all this up. We haven't even started using it in the first place. You know? Like that. Raghunath Das is glorified because he had the opulences of Indra. He had a wife as beautiful as Indrani. And he gave it up. Like that. He gave up. You know? The Goswamis had position and all, they gave it up. They were strict followers of the culture, they gave it up. You know, I mean, when Yamunacharya is saying, you know, goodbye to my three times Sandhya, because he used to very nicely sit down and chant his Sandhya and all the tarpanas and all the rules and right, and now he's just absorbing Krishna. He doesn't know what time of day or night it is. Goodbye to my three times bath, because he would take three times bath. You know, goodbye to, because those are there. He's not saying goodbye to my, you know, motorcycle and, you know, boogie board down at the beach and, you know, goodbye to my, you know, refrigerator and my pasta and all that. He's not saying that. He's saying goodbye to human culture because I'm going beyond that. I'm not even going to worry about what's going on in this world. I'm going to be so absorbed in the spiritual world and following the culture there, I'm not even going to notice what's happening here. I eat, don't eat, sleep, don't sleep, you know, lay down in a mud puddle, I don't even care. Because I'm not even on the bodily platform. I'm just absorbed in the spiritual pastimes. So there, you know, we're getting up and doing all things and dressing and bathing nicely and decorating Radha and Krishna and all those things. There. Here, couldn't care less. Mm-hmm. But as long as we care here, then we have to follow the culture. Have to follow that. But the point is that culture without Krishna consciousness is useless. It's nice, it's pious. It's the best way to live in the material world. But there's nothing special about living in the material world. Mm. You know, whether it's Brahma or on down. So therefore, so much of strongness is spoken against us. Otherwise, you make the living entity pious. You purify him. What happens? He immediately becomes attached to material things. Higher. But because they're higher, just like in the West, anything to do with the mind must be spiritual. Right? So in the same way, unless these things are said, as soon as the devotee gives up the sinful inclinations, you know, then they become attached to the pious. Mm. Yeah? Like that. So that has to be given up. Just like in the West, you know, the husband and wife couldn't care less about, you know, each other, this or that, or, you know, maintaining proper standards. One becomes purified, one becomes attached to proper chastity and proper, you know, care and interact, but that's still piety. Right? But that's the lifestyle. But one can't get attached to that and think because that, life is perfect. Life is perfect because now we're thinking of Krishna. As a lifestyle, we're going to live this lifestyle instead of a sinful one. Like that, but it's still, one has to go beyond. The consciousness has to go beyond. The body, gross and subtle bodies, are engaged in the rules and regulations of the devotional culture and the Varnashram system. But the consciousness must go beyond to Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, the consciousness will be in religiosity, sub-religious principles, morality, the senses, or liberation. Like that. That's all there is in the material world. You know, so they're following Varnashram, but only for material purposes. So we have to put our consciousness in pure, pure transcendental consciousness, anandamoy. But the body and mind are still engaged in the Varnashramic activities. Until such time as we come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Then if it's favorable for our service, then we may give them up. If it's not favorable for preaching we must maintain, then it will be maintained. You know, Prabhupada, as acting as a, you know, as a, you know, student, as student, grihasta, vanaprast, he did not break the rules of Varnashram. But his consciousness was always in the spiritual. So that's the example. So it's just, that's the thing we have to be able to see, because there's the idea, the Western thing is that if there's a fault, it's thrown out 100%. And I'll take it 100% as long as I don't find any fault. You know, it's like a theorem. I don't find any fault, then it must be true. You know, it must, so, but the thing is material means fault. But within material, I discriminate, this is the best of the material. Like Prabhupada says, best of a bad bargain. The whole material world is a bad bargain, but the best of it is following the lifestyle and the mode of goodness. I take that, but that's still defective. But it's the best situation in which I can get myself out of here. Like that. So we have to be able to have this discrimination that we can accept. It has fault, but it's the best of what has fault. Only because it's connected to Krishna. So the reality is that connection. Then it works. Then it can work. Otherwise, then the problem is we go to extremes and then we'll get nothing. You know? So we have the philosophy without the religion or the culture. Then we only have mental speculation. We don't have a complete lifestyle. You know? There'll be dissatisfaction of the gross and subtle body. If you accept philosophy only without the culture, then the gross and subtle body will be dissatisfied. And if you accept the culture, the religiosity, without the philosophy, the gross and subtle body will be satisfied to some degree, because they can never be fully satisfied. But it'll just be sentimental. One will not really have any answers. One will not have any real direction. And one will, with time, fall from that position. So either way, one is going to have problems. One's going to fall. So you have to have both. You have to have the philosophy for the consciousness and the devotional activities for the consciousness, and those, then the body, and gross and subtle body, are engaged in Lord's service. So the devotional activities engage the gross and subtle and give us the opportunity to be conscious of Krishna. Without that, it won't work. So the philosophy has to become practical as practical service and culture. Then it works. Okay. Yes, Matthew. Is this a loaded question? And I understand. I'm just saying. It depends on if these are Namhata devotees and stuff. I don't know the situation. Mainly, there's not Namhata, because Namhata groups also, they do this, as sometimes they do for. Then there's not a, for them there's no real benefit, for anybody hearing there's no real benefit. You know, Prabhupada mentioned about the sahajiyas, as they chant all kinds of mantras and this and that. He says it's good for the bile secretion. You know, it gets them going and gets the activities and all the organs moving and juices flowing and all that. But the spiritual benefit is not really much. If they're Namhata groups, then, you know, they're connected and this is what they know, this is the kind of kirtan they know how to do. And so they engage themselves in the Lord's service. So in that way, then there's benefit. But if it's not that, you know, then it's not so much. The benefit will be definitely less, unless they have an idea that they're coming, and as service for Jagannath, they're singing according to how they know. If that mentality is there, then there'll be some. You know, more for themselves, probably less for others. It depends upon what the mentality of those people are. I don't know. See, it depends if you're paying them, they're coming here, and it's just a program like any other program they do anywhere else, and that, then one could think that that's, you know, a definite possibility. It's a matter of, you know, they understand that we're having a special program here. If you'd like to come and take part and all that, and we'll give you a place to stay, and, you know, like that. And then you sing for Jagannath, and there is kind of that mood of service, then, you know, it's like, because Krishna says, you give, you know, something of whatever you have, and many of these people, that's all they have. This is their occupation, this is how they make their money. So it would have to be seen the mentality, though it's not as ideal as if you have devotees who know the philosophy and all this, have regulation in their life, and chant. So it may be beneficial for them, but then in such a case, and one might want to, you know, how you say, reduce the amplification, you know, because it may be good for them, but it's not necessarily good for everybody else. So that just has to be seen on what is their reason for doing, their motive for doing like that. But, you know, it's not our normal tradition. Did that answer the question? Or? Yeah. Okay. Yes, Madam. I think much what you're dealing with is the mentality, or things that happen after that, after the initiation, because the holy name himself destroys, but he's destroying on the point of good faith, that here's a serious person wants to do, they're not committing anything more and all this. So generally what it is anything new. So the spiritual master is recommended for initiation that here is a very serious person, and then when they're not so serious and they do nonsense, and that reaction, you know, in some degree or another, some proportion, depending upon the Lord, goes to the spiritual master because they've recommended. You know, it's kind of like you recommended, but this person is still doing these things. And the mentality will come. That's why it said that one should not accept, that one of the ninth offense of the holy name is also accepting unqualified disciples. Is that one has to be very, very careful of expanding accepting of disciples if they're not very strict or very qualified. Because otherwise in that, those reactions will come. Right? By one's own chanting and all this, then they may go away. But one has to have that strength and that, otherwise one may be overwhelmed. Does that make any sense? Okay. So we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki? Śrīdrupa Gosvāmī Pāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivarinda ki, Jāyanitai Gaura Pranamanda.